Recordings has now started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the GNSO Next Generation Registration Directory Services RDS Policy Development Process Working Group call on the 1st of March, 2016. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. So if you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
Hello, this is Stuart Clark, only on the phone.
Thank you, Stuart.
And Jeremy Malcolm from EFF is here on the phone.
Thank you, Jeremy. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking as to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to Susan Kawaguchi to begin the conference.
Thank you. And thank you all for dialing in this morning and hopefully another fruitful discussion. Chuck could not be on the call this morning, so he's asked me to step in just for today. And I was not on the call last week, so hopefully I've come up to speed since then on any decisions and discussions. I did listen to most of the transcript or the recording from last week. And at this point, is there anyone that wants to update their or mention any updates to the SOI? And I just remind you that that's important to do if you have a change. Okay, so it doesn't look like I don't see any hands up. So there was a draft poll that was sent around yesterday, and Stephanie, I'm going to ask you to present that if you're on the call. I'm sorry, I should have checked this. Yes. Is that possible for you to present? Oh, and I apologize. This was only sent to the small group, so everyone has not seen it, but now Marika has put it up on the Adobe Connect. Stephanie, can you review the work that your small team has done?
Sure. Happy to do that, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. And thanks to Lisa for working on this last minute. As we know, those who were on the call last week will know we were circulating a draft list and discussing which particular types of expertise might be needed on this group, asking people to identify all the various aspects. So we collected some feedback from the community. Lisa pulled it into this draft poll. We're going to be sending it out using SurveyMonkey, I believe. And basically, this is the kind of draft version 3, which we hope incorporates everything that people have submitted. So I see I can scroll. I'll just go down. We're asking people to basically identify what kind of expertise they have. So under legal, there's IP law, criminal law, civil law, protection law, and human rights law. Under technical, and there's quite a bit of discussion on all of these subcategories. Obviously, we could split hairs and go on and on. But the important thing is, have we got the basic areas covered? So under technical, we finally arrived at protocol development, security, and software development. There's obviously other things like network management, which we put under operational. But this is how we did it. Data protection, we put two basic areas, having identified legal as having a data protection segment. There's data protection authorities, and then there is other. And that includes all other kind of, you know, obviously if you're the person working on data protection in a company, you know something about it, even if you're not a lawyer. So operational, rather rough categories of registrar, registry, and then ISP or network management of some kind. Under other commercial expertise, we have e-business, cybercrime investigator, and other. And always for the other categories, there's a text box to fill in the details. Under non-commercial, there's nonprofit or not-for-profit and other. And that would, of course, include academia. I didn't bother putting a separate category in there. For government advisory, in my view, that was meant to represent the GAC representatives. So there's government official. I'm not quite sure what legislative means myself, and other. Then under law enforcement, there's police, investigator, and court. Under individual internet user, there's consumer, registrant, and other. And then there is a separate category for non-governmental investigator, researcher, other relevant expertise. So under three, we invite people to expand in the text box. So we're hoping that we can wrap this up quickly and send it out to people and basically try to review what expertise we have around the table because, you know, frankly, the SOIs tell you a little bit about who people are, but not necessarily their expertise. Thanks. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Stephanie. Is there any questions from the working group? Mark Anderson.
Hi, this is Mark Anderson. Stephanie, thank you for the overview there. Just one question. I think this has been asked before, so apologies if this has been answered. But just take legal, for example. If I have legal expertise, would I be expected to fill out the legal row as well as the applicable subcategory or subcolumn on there as well, or would I be expected just to fill in the appropriate subcategory? Thank you.
Stephanie, can you comment on that? So I'm not sure if Stephanie can get back on, but I would assume just in a quick review of this is that you should fill out any area that you have expertise in. So we really know. We don't want to limit anybody. We'd want to see the broad range of knowledge. Lisa, did you have a comment on that?
Yeah, since I mocked up the poll for this small team, I just wanted to comment that the way it's structured, you can respond or not to any row. So if you wanted to just respond to a general category indicating you have some expertise in that category, then you could elaborate that on in the text box for question three if you wished or not. If there was a subcategory that you thought was particularly appropriate for you, then you could check that as well as the major category. Hopefully that answers the question.
Okay, and Greg. Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. A couple of questions/suggestions. Kind of going down from the top. I don't know if this will confuse anybody. Hopefully it won't, but I take it in civil law as it's being used here means non-criminal law and does not refer to civil law versus common law as two different types of legal regimes. But if anybody thinks that's confusing, I don't know if we want to make any changes, but I just kind of bring that up as something that could be potentially confusing. Then next, there's kind of a redundancy. When you get down to other commercial expertise, it mentions private sector cybercrime investigator, which is really quite detailed or narrow. And then at the very end, it says non-governmental investigator / researcher, which is more general. I don't know if we want to have an investigator or category that has cybercrime investigator and other investigator, or if those should be combined generally and just be private sector investigator slash researcher with no specific reference to cybercrime. And I think hopefully in either case it's expected to be not somebody who just generally, you know, does research like, you know, how many Italian restaurants are there in Marrakesh. But it's, you know, an investigator who's hired to investigate things and people and entities and activities related to, you know, where the data in RDS or who is would be relevant. But kind of question whether those categories should be separate and whether that last category perhaps should be at least brought up to the other commercial expertise category. And the other relevant expertise row probably should be a row of its own. That's probably just an editing thing. Next, the row that's marked government advisory. When I see the term government advisory used, that's usually a fancy term for lobbyists and not for government itself. So I might take out, just have the category that's now called government advisory called government, and then perhaps have government advisory slash lobbying as a separate expertise. I'm not the one who suggested government advisory in the first place. I'm just saying how I tend to see it used. And I don't think it's the right heading for kind of actual government employees. Those are my comments for the moment. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Stephanie, did you want to comment? I noticed you're in the chat room. She has made several comments.
Let me try again. Can you hear me?
Yes.
No. Oh, good.
Yes.
Wonderful. Okay, so I think those are great comments, Greg. The government advisory, I took people to mean the GAC, because we have a few GAC members here, and that can cover quite a range of government functions. So then we subdivided it into government officials and other, I think, government officials. Legislative, as I said when I ran through it, I'm not sure what that means. If it's courts, we've already got courts covered under law enforcement. So, you know, I'm a little confused about it myself, but we tried to roll everybody's comments in here. In terms of the common law, civil law, it's certainly an issue in Europe and in Canada and in plenty of other countries as well. But we did mean the civil courts versus the criminal courts. You know, so maybe we need to clarify that, put a little bit more in there. In terms of the different investigators, we did not intend lobbyists in here unless I missed something really vital, and I did go to the late night meeting. So we need to clarify that as well, because I think that's really quite confusing. The special category of private sector cybercrime investigator, we have quite a few folks who have already claimed that kind of expertise. So I think it does require a separate category, and I'm not comfortable with having just investigator because it covers, I mean, who is an investigator? An academic is an investigator, a researcher, you know. We have all kinds of investigators. So I think that was Steve Metallis' addition, and he might want to talk about it. But we had a lengthy discussion about security and the various aspects of security, and cybercrime investigation certainly, I think, fits under that. And Michaeli, I see, just put into the chat that there are former government types around. You don't have to be a current, have a current function to list it. The whole point, you know, having spent 30 years in government, I will certainly list government expertise and clarify in the box that I'm not doing it now, you know? So let's be clear about that, folks. Not what you're doing right now. It's the expertise that you have gathered over the many years. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephanie. Beth Allegretti?
Hi, it's Beth Allegretti. So in the boxes where we indicate our level of experience, what is the difference between none and no answer?
Good question. Do you want to answer that? Or Lisa? Lisa's got her hand up.
Yeah, in constructing this mock-up, I assumed that the default would be no answer. Think of these as radio buttons. The default would be no answer for each of these rows, and then as you fill out the poll, you can click on none, basic, average, or advanced, or expert if you want to indicate some level of expertise for that area. Your point is well taken that none could be no answer. However, some people may actually explicitly want to indicate that they have no expertise in a certain area, as opposed to simply not having addressed the question at hand. For example, myself, if I were filling out this poll, I might choose to fill out the technical row and check off areas that I have some expertise in, but I probably wouldn't bother filling out the legal row as that's not my area, so I would leave that at no answer rather than indicating none.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. And Michele.
Thanks, Michele, for the record transcript and all that. No, that's helpful, actually, knowing about the no answer, none. Of course, what Lisa's obviously done is trying to put something that will go into some kind of survey tool into a Word document that we can revise. So that makes perfect sense to me. Just in terms of timing around this, bear in mind, today is the 1st of March. When will this go out? When is the plan for this to go out? And what will the turnaround be on this? Stephanie, thanks.
So this is Susan. This should go out shortly after this meeting, though taking in to consideration some of the comments, so it may take a little bit longer. Stephanie, did you, and I don't know on the turnaround. Lisa or Stephanie, could you answer that? Oh, not sure Stephanie can get back on. Lisa, do you know how long the poll will be out there for people to respond?
Sure. So what the time frame that the leadership has suggested, of course, that's subject to revision in this call by the working group, is that we try to get this poll posted today without any further delay, that we leave it open through the beginning of the Marrakesh meeting, so that gives you roughly a little under a week to respond, and then that gives the small team an opportunity to review the results in advance of the Wednesday meeting in Marrakesh, where we could discuss any possible outreach needed to reflect the results.
Okay, thanks. And Marika, did you have a comment on that? Marika?
Hi, Susan. Yes, sorry, my raising hand is very delayed, but Susan already covered it. Or at least I already covered it, sorry.
Okay, thanks. All right, let's go to Kathy.
Great. Thanks, Susan. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Terrific. Okay, so I have a question for Stephanie about the non-commercial section, and it has to do with nonprofit and other. And I wanted to ask what those mean and just comment that nonprofit, as has been drilled into my head now for so many years, nonprofit is, as I understand it, a URS tax category that doesn't apply to many of the NGOs in the world, which are non-commercial but not necessarily nonprofit under U.S. law. So would another category for NGOs be appropriate? And also, where would we put those NGOs specifically that specialize in the types of risks or harms that this working group is going to need to be aware of, including those specializing in domestic violence, who we heard about in the Proxy Privacy Accreditation Working Group, journalists, and political minorities. Would NGO cover that category? Do we need something else under non-commercial? Thanks.
And Stephanie, can you respond to that?
Stephanie Perrin, for the record, can you hear me?
Definitely, yes.
Wonderful. I can't figure out what's going on with the microphone. Anyway, I think that though you could put any of those not-for-profits under the non-commercial. You could put it on the top line. You could put it under the not-for-profit. You could put it under other. I understand the desire to have those folks represented. I don't think we can keep subdividing and subdividing and subdividing. There is an innate problem with this in that if you're looking globally, I see that Karnika has given us an explanation for what legislative means. That's certainly not how we describe that function in Canada. Well, I would call that policy. I would call that a government official doing policy, and I did it, you know, so I think I know what I'm talking about. It'll be different in countries in Africa, for instance, how we tag these things. So please, folks, we can't subdivide these things into all of the categories. But if you don't think that the non-commercial category is explicative enough that people will identify their expertise there, Kathy, please suggest something. In my country, there are government people who work on domestic violence issue, changes of identity. I would hope that they would identify that under the government official role and put it in the blank text box so that we know what we're talking about. Thanks.
Okay, Stephanie, thank you for that. And Karnika.
Yes. Well, I just wrote this that we can reword the word legislative if that is something that other nations or jurisdictions do not use to mean policy drafting or policy making. We can reword it as policy drafting or policy making if that is a universal consensus. I mean, we can at least arrive at that decision.
I'm sorry, Karnika. I didn't quite catch that. Stephanie, can you respond? Or Karnika, would you like to say that again? I apologize.
Okay. I was just suggesting that in case there are different countries where this term is not very commonly used, we can instead use the term policy drafting, if that is something which one is easily able to understand.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yes. And second thing which I highlighted as well was that if there are more categories which a person fits into and would be able to give his expertise on, so that is an option with the person who, whichever categories apply to such person can definitely mark those areas.
Okay, so I think people can mark as many boxes as they feel they have the expertise. So I think we can capture a lot in this document. Alan, let's move on to you.
Thank you very much. I really don't think it's worth putting an awful lot more time into this. This is not a particularly precise instrument. We're not asking for documentary proof that someone actually has the skills they're ticking off. The main purpose, as I understand it, is to make sure that we don't have any big gaps. So let's put it out there. If we end up with some categories where there no one has said they have any expertise, then we need to explain it a little bit more and see, did someone misunderstand the terminology? I think the other at the bottom needs to be have more focus. That is, do you have other expertise that's applicable to this PDP that you believe you should call attention to? So we can look at that and see, did they misunderstand some other category, or indeed, did we forget some category? But beyond that, this is a quick measure of are we ready to do the work, and I don't think we need to agonize too much over the details. Thank you.
Okay, Alan, and actually I agree with you, except I do have a couple of comments on my own, but let's go to Greg.
Thanks. Just briefly, since this is my second go-around, just wanted to point out that legislative, I think, is still needed for the for what I think of the meaning is, which is, you know, experience in or with legislative bodies such as Congress's, Parliament's, you know, Council of Europe, whatever it may be, although they technically don't quite make laws, but you know, lawmaking bodies. That's what I when I think of a legislator, that is, and a legislature, that is what that means. So if we want to have a separate line for kind of, you know, policy staff, no, that's fine, but I don't want to lose, if we have actual legislative experience, either in, you know, staff or, you know, sitting as an actual legislator, we shouldn't lose track of that. And I also agree that the other category, you know, needs to be, really need to be, has to be as inviting as possible to get other information, because I, no matter how many things we try to think of here, especially as we're trying to keep it high level, you know, we're not going to be able to, you know, list everything. And I think there is a secondary gain from this poll, not just learning what gaps we might have, absences, but also learning the presence of expertise. And, you know, not everybody wears every piece of expertise they have on their sleeve. So be good to have a place where kind of people are positively encouraged to offer up that expertise, so we'll know that we may have some interesting expertise. Finally, a couple of categories that, you know, could be relevant that aren't listed here, I'm not quite sure where they would go, would be cybersecurity, which is really different from data protection. And the only place we mentioned cybercrime in the private sector is in investigative, and not any other role. So I wonder if there's a cybersecurity slot that could be used. Obviously, somebody could put that in other. And the same thing goes with anti-piracy. There's no place for that here either. But that's what I've got. Thanks.
Thanks. I do think the tech security may fill both of those slots. And before we go to Stephanie, if you don't mind, Stephanie, I did have a question about, personally, in my own capacity, under operational, I was wondering why proxy vendors or services were not included in that. Sometimes they are associated with the registrar, but not always. And then I'm assuming that e-business would be the slot to indicate expertise if you, which, you know, there's several of us on the call, including me, that manage domain names for large businesses. And so is that what e-business was intended for? Was you have an individual registrant under internet users, but these are not individuals. It's corporations. So it would be good to hear answers to those questions too, Stephanie. Are you there, Stephanie? I see the red flash.
Here, can you not hear me?
Now I can hear you.
Can you hear me again?
Yes.
Maybe there's just a time lag.
Yes.
Okay, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, for those not watching the chat, I strongly endorsed what Alan Greenberg said about let's not gild the lily here, folks. This is a blunt instrument, and we can't put everything down. So I think that Greg, I don't want to pick on you, Greg, but you raised a number of interesting points, but that's what others for. This thing is going to be so big, nobody's going to want to fill it out if we keep adding categories. On the cybercrime, cybersecurity, of which we have a ton of people, if they can't find themselves under technical because they don't do technical, tick the box anyway and explain it under other. because obviously social engineering is a major issue now, and you can be a real expert, but only on social engineering. So, frankly, I think we have to draw a line under this thing and get it out and implore people, and maybe, Lisa, we could work on imploring language to implore people to embellish on their various areas of expertise in the open box, because I presume the task of reviewing this is also going to fall on the little sub-team, and I put up my hand and say I'll happily read everything you put in that text box. let's please not make it three pages, you know? I don't know about Susan's issues on e-business. If you can think of a way of amending it quickly, I agree that that's a rather light category, but again, can we not put it in other? E-business is very broad.
Yeah. No, and I agree with that we should not make this huge, that we need to get it out, and that the text box allows all the comments necessary. One reminder of the whole working group too is this is each working group member's personal expertise. In my own capacity at working for Facebook, I could answer all of these, but I don't have that expertise myself. So it's not the company. If you do work for a company, it's your own personal experience. So I just want to caution you to keep that in mind as you answer the poll. And I think we've come to the end of the queue. And so we'll send this back to the small group. Stephanie, maybe if there's any changes that you're going to make, please work with Lisa on that. And we'll see if we can get this out to the whole working group. And just as a reminder again, anything you feel like to the working group, if you do not see a category for it, please put it in the text box. And hopefully Stephanie won't be reading forever, or the small group won't be reading forever. All right. So I think we can close on that one. And the next point on the agenda is to review the rules of engagement in the charter, and staff is going to walk us through that.
Yes, so this is Marika. Thanks, Susan. So basically, we put this item on the agenda just to make sure everyone's aware of the rules of engagement as they're outlined in the charter, which are basically derived from the GNSO working group guidelines. So these are basically the rules under which all GNSO PDP working groups operate. As said, we think it's important that everyone understands that as a starting point. No doubt we'll come back to this at the relevant point in time to make sure everyone's on the same page, but we already wanted to point it out now as well as we start looking at our work plan and then starting to engage, of course, in our deliberations. So the first part I wanted to point out is that within a GNSO context, there are a number of consensus-level designations that are used. You may have heard these terms before, but again, it's important to know that in a different context, they may have a different meaning. So the way in which consensus levels are assigned in the GNSO working groups or the different levels is, first of all, there is full consensus, basically when everyone agrees and no one speaks against a specific recommendation. There is consensus, a position where only a small minority disagrees, but most agree. And again, I think it's important to remember, as some people sometimes think that consensus means that everyone has to support or agree with a certain position, but in a GNSO context, that is not necessarily the case. Then there's also strong support but significant opposition, which is a position where, while most of the group supports a recommendation, there are a significant number of those who do not support it. Divergence, where basically there's a position where there isn't really strong support, but many different points of view. And then there are also minority views that may be expressed that refer to a proposal where a small number of people support a recommendation, but not a recommendation that has achieved the consensus perspective or the strong support but significant opposition, and where they want to make that specifically known. It's important to recall, remember as well that this is not a numbers game as such. Basically, it doesn't mean that there's a specific percentage. If 75% of working group members say yes, that means consensus. It's a more delicate balance and an assessment that takes place as part of the GNSO process. As of course, consensus needs to be weighed as well, looking at representation in a group, as we do, of course, want to avoid that a working group is stacked just to count numbers. So in that regard, the chairs play an important role in that consensus development process, which is really an iterative process. Basically, after the group has discussed and the chairs, the leadership team believes the working group has arrived at a position where it's clear what the views are, they may basically indicate, well, we believe that we have consensus or full consensus even. That is basically communicated to the group, and it allows everyone to say, well, yes, we agree, or actually, no, I actually don't support this yet, and I believe other colleagues don't support it either. Can we discuss a bit more? So this is then an iterative process that the chairs go through with the working group to be able to, at the end of the day, to make it a determination where the group stands. And again, as part of that process, the chairs will indicate whether there's full consensus, strong support but significant opposition, or no consensus on certain recommendations. It's also important to note that, and again, it's really for the working group to review or decide how to do that with, in regards to either their initial report or their final report. In certain cases, groups will just determine level of consensus on the overall report and basically say, this is, you know, report has the consensus with all the recommendations in it, or there may be a need to actually go to the individual level if there are certain recommendations where there is consensus, but on other recommendations there may be a different level. It may also go down to an individual level of designation of what level of support it has. Another point to keep in mind as well is that this the designation level is expected to be included in the final report of the working group, because this is an important guidance to the GNSO Council when it considers the recommendation to be able to assess what level of support was there in the working group for those recommendations. Basically talking from personal experience, it often then is that consensus and full consensus aligns as well with the support that is then seen in the GNSO Council, which is reflected in the votes that are expressed on a proposal. One thing to note as well, and you may have seen it in other working groups, that sometimes polls are used to assess a level of support. However, the working group guidelines clearly point out as well that great care needs to be taken with polls, and it's basically only used when chairs really don't see another method to assess the views of the working group, as there's, of course, all kinds of potential issues associated with polls. First of all, asking of the questions, how are questions framed? Do people understand exactly what is being asked? And then, of course, as well, polls often come down as well to more accounting of responses, which, again, is not the way in which the level of consensus is assessed in the GNSO working group context, as more factors need to be taken into account, such as where are the different voices coming from? Are all those disagreeing coming from one specific organization or part of the ICANN community, or is it broadly spread across different groups, which may influence or impact the way in which the chairs make their designation? The working group guidelines also clearly point out what processes in place should several participants disagree with the ultimate designation that is given by the chairs of the PDP working group. So there's a specific step process that is in place by which the working group members can raise that with the chairs, the liaison, and at the end of the day, if it really comes to that end, it could even result in an appeal to the chartering organization. But just speaking from experience here, I don't recall any occasion where that has actually happened. So, of course, we're hoping as well that that is not necessary here. So I think that in a nutshell explains the process as well, the way in which consensus is assessed in a PDP working group context. As I said before, one of the things that the working group will need to consider eventually is at what stage it wants to go through that process of already assessing consensus. There is, of course, an opportunity to already document that as part of the initial report, but I want to note as well that, at least based on experience with other PDP working groups, often groups choose not to do so at the stage of the initial report, but more indicate in a general sense, these are some of the recommendations we're putting forward. We actually haven't done a formal consensus call yet, although we do, there is agreement to actually consult the community on these, although nothing would prevent you either from at that stage already clearly indicating if there is consensus for certain parts or maybe not others. But it is a requirement for the final report to have the consensus levels included in the report and the recommendations, and especially in those cases where there is no full consensus, to also have the names associated of those people that may not agree or support the recommendations. So again, to give the council a full perspective of support or lack thereof for certain recommendations. And I think I'll leave it at that for now. I don't know if there are any questions.
Thanks, Marika. It looks like Grace has a question. Grace, I think you're on mute. Okay. So, Grace, are you there? Are there any other questions on the rules of engagement? Oh, great. We still can't hear you, but the flash is off your microphone. Okay. Not sure, Grace, if we can... Are you talking? We cannot hear you, or I can't hear you at least. No. Okay, she's going to type the question. So we can hear you typing, I think. Stephanie, would you like to ask the question? And you do have your microphone has a flash in it. There we go.
Okay, Stephanie Perrin for the record. Thanks for that rundown, Marika. Can you just clarify what is our scope if we discover that the charter is somehow constraining? I remember when we reviewed it, the feeling was that it was really quite flexible, comprehending the amount of work we're doing and the fact that things may change as we go along. What's the process if we decide to do something or not to do something that is in the process, in the charter?
So this is Marika. I think, as you said, the charter has a lot of flexibility because I think in many instances it will talk about, at a minimum, this is what the working group is expected to address. But if regardless of that, the working group believes it has constraints or it is of the view that it would like clarification on what it's expected to do, then it would need to take that back to the GNSO Council. So again, that could take two forms, and again, talking from experience with other PDP working groups, in certain cases it may just be a clarification where a working group basically asks, we understand this to be part of our remit, can you confirm that that is the case? And the council then may say yes or no. Or in those cases where the working group really believes that certain aspects are not covered in the charter and as a result are not covering the work that needs to be undertaken in order to address the charter questions, the working group could also go back to the council to ask for a change to its charter. Basically, there's a specific process that the council would need to approve those changes to the charter, but there is a process that would be available should the working group really believe that there are certain crucial elements missing in the charter. One thing to note here as well is that, of course, the charter and the way the work has been organized is basically based on the work that was carried out by the board and GNSO Council process working group. So a lot of thought and effort went into that, and that basically has dictated the way the issue report at first instance has been structured, as well as how the charter is structured, and as a result also the work plan has been developed. So if there are any fundamental issues with the process framework and how that was proposed, my personal understanding would be that that then probably would need to be a conversation between the GNSO Council and the board, who both jointly agree to this proposed process for the specific PDP, to basically have a conversation with those two groups to explain why the working group would believe that the actual framework as originally developed and adopted does not meet the needs of this PDP, and then for a kind of joint decision to see if that those concerns can be addressed. But again, that's my personal interpretation or assessment in relation to the process framework. But the first stop would always be the GNSO Council to consult and get guidance on these questions. And maybe also to note there that, of course, as a parallel effort, the leadership team has reached out to the board working group that has been created on RDS to talk through what mechanisms of engagement or consultation should be put in place to facilitate as well the exchanges of views and potentially raising of concerns or potential limitations the working group believes are as a result of the charter. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Are there any other questions on the rules of engagement? Okay, looks like not. So we're going to move on to item five, which is the work plan, draft work plan. And Chuck has worked very hard on this, and the leadership team in general has reviewed it, and we've spent some time discussing it and making some revisions. And it was sent out, and I think there was several questions posted in the email thread, and I apologize, did not. Some of those I read, and some of the I just didn't have time to get to them. So we're just going to go through this pretty briefly and get to the meat of it. So I think most of this Chuck probably reviewed last week, but phase one is really recommending requirements for registration directory services, and policy is to be made in the following phases. The board recommended the EWG final report should be the starting point, but that doesn't limit us to just the work of the EWG. And so if we decide on other requirements, that we need to put those, make sure that we're considering those. So to create a comprehensive and inclusive list, we need to seek input from the SOs, ACs, and the community in general. And there are 11 questions under that the requirements could be grouped. And we need to review all of those questions, and then but not consider any of our decisions final until we've looked at the overall picture and then come back and review it again. And if we've reached consensus on the requirements related to questions 1 through 5, the working group should attempt to reach a consensus recommendation. So, and I think everybody has scroll capabilities on this. So if we go to page 2, we definitely have, Chuck has created a draft work plan. You all should have a copy of this in your email also. And, some of these we've done. We've approved the leadership team members, and we're moving on. Today we reviewed the rules of engagement and We are, and we're working on identifying expertise through the poll of the working group membership. So, you know, if you had time to review this and the charter, then are there any questions on, and I know on the thread, you know, email thread, there was some questions about where we really start with this. So if anybody wants to discuss that now, or we can just walk through the target dates and the all of the SOAC outreach. Okay, Stephanie.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I've raised this issue with Chuck, and he assures me that the order is okay the way it is, but there is a, as they say in French, a grand primordial, and that is, and it was, it's, I read it again in the charter, what registration data needs to be collected, used, and disclosed for what purposes. And it does seem to me that if we don't ask that question, and it's a somewhat philosophical one at the beginning, we risk accepting as kind of a fait accompli the use cases that will come forward in the order that we have right now. Now, Chuck has assured me that we will be not accepting all of the possible data elements and uses from the get-go, but I still think that we need to have a clear understanding as a group, at least of where we disagree in terms of the purpose for the collection, use, and disclosure of registration data. And this is, as I said in a previous meeting, the frame from which someone in the data protection field examines the use of personal information is somewhat different from the way ICANN goes about engineering its processes. And so that's thing number one. I want a discussion on that sort of upfront. And thing number two, I've just spent some quality time on the who is conflicts with law implementation. I forget even, we were a bunch of volunteers. We were not a working group. And it was an entirely unsatisfactory experience from many of us's perspective, because we just more or less reified the process that is in there now. I asked repeatedly, why do we not invite the data commissioners who have written to ICANN to intervene and explain how they view this? And never got an answer. And I would ask that same question right now. We have, and I circulated some of the data protection documents, the key ones. The data protection commissioners are concerned about who is from a number of perspectives. They're concerned about data retention, which is part of that that original question that we were tasked by the board to answer. And they're concerned about escrow. Why not talk to them up front, so that we understand the risks that we are putting the registrars and the persons who will have their servers seized and their operations shut down and, in some cases, fines. Why don't we do that up front? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Stephanie. So let's just, the first part of your question was basically purpose versus data, and which one, you know, chicken and the egg, which one comes first. And, you know, since you and I both were on the EWG, we struggled with that, identifying data elements and then, you know, also the purposes and what is truly needed and what isn't, what shouldn't be viewed by third parties, all of those questions. It's a hard nut to crack, in my opinion. And I think those are, you know, today we won't have the time to go through an in-depth discussion on this draft work plan, but those are good questions that we should think about in Marrakesh. So if staff can just add that question to the as one of the agenda items for Marrakesh, I think that would be helpful. There's definitely differing points of view on that. And I can't give you an answer on, you know, and I'm not sure you were expecting an answer from me anyway, about talking to the data protection authorities, but that could be a discussion point too for Marrakesh. Is that something that is even feasible? You know, my key question to that is, will they respond to us when it's we're sort of talking in generalities? So that's my viewpoint. But let's make notes on those two things and put that on the list for Marrakesh. And Kathy?
Hi, Susan. Hi, all. Following up on Stephanie's discussion, several things. One is that, of course, we've just gotten this draft work plan, and so a thought that we may not be able to close it by the next meeting. We're all en route, and many other issues are going to be coming up, so that I hope it's not the end of the world if we continue to discuss it even after next week, you know, maybe for one more week, because we've just gotten it. And it's very important. What the roadmap is for what we do is very, very important. We're beginning to get comments, so I wanted to support Scott's comment that question four become question one, and wanted to reiterate my comment that question five become question two. These seem to be the foundational questions. What data is being collected, stored, and disclosed? What data should be collected, stored, and disclosed? And then what are the constraints on that data? You know, what data protection laws, comprehensive data protection laws, are approximately half of the world now and certainly involve many registrars where they're located and more registrars where their registrants are located. So are there constraints on our evaluation? Are there things that we should be understanding about primary use and secondary use? Understanding kind of data protection laws writ large would be very helpful for that. Am I still on the call?
You are. I can hear you at least. Not sure who dropped off.
When they silence it, I'll keep talking. Great. And the other thing, and I wanted to ask you, Susan, when it comes, one of the things we did on the WHO review team, even before the expert working group, was, which Susan and I were on together, was looking at going through the actual elements of what we collect in the WHO is today and trying to understand whether they're technical or operational, you know, for what purpose are they being collected. And that was really, we did that session early on, and it turned out that was a really informative session for everyone because a lot of people didn't know all the elements that are being collected in the WHO is. And so starting with what we're doing now, and why we're doing it. Where is that in the work plan, and then how do we talk about reevaluating the questions for a slightly different order? Thanks.
So thank you for those questions. And just to Lisa, well, I'll get back to you in a second, Lisa. But so you're advocating, well, Scott advocated that question four on data elements become question one, what data should be collected, stored, and disclosed. You're advocating question five, which is privacy. What steps are needed to protect data and privacy should become question two, which is gated access. What steps should be taken to control data access for each user and purpose? In response to Stephanie, you know, we really – the EWG, and this is my personal capacity, not as chairing this today, but we really struggled with identifying the data elements. And actually, I was right there with Scott to begin with, that let's look at the data elements, let's look at the current WHO is, see what data elements are being collected and should they be disclosed and do we really need them anymore. But at the end of the day, that discussion always ended up in what is the use of the data and the purpose. So then we sort of revamped our thinking and centered on users and purposes. and came up with a case, the use cases. So as part of the board GNSO working group that developed, that helped develop the charter, it seemed important to me that we start again, because we spent so much time in the EWG talking about use cases and the users and purposes, that it's hard to answer the other questions unless you've done that. You tend to jump back to that question. That's my personal viewpoint on that. But, you know, that we could, it definitely warrants a discussion in Marrakesh on that. And Lisa?
Thank you, Susan. Lisa Pfeiffer, for the record. It occurs to me that some of the questions or suggestions regarding, you know, what order each of these questions should be dealt with, that it might inform this work group's discussion to get somewhat of a tutorial on the process framework that that group of GNSO counselors and board members came up with. I know that that's posted on the wiki, and you've all probably read it to some degree, but it might be useful for you to actually have an overview of it in Marrakesh or in a future call to be able to ask questions and get at why that group came up with the order that it did, because it is largely intended to reflect dependencies and try to overcome the impasse that the community has pretty much been stuck on for a while now. That is not to say that the order they came up with is perfect, but just hearing the rationale behind it, I think, might be helpful to this working group.
Actually, I think that's a really good suggestion. Lisa, do you think we could put that on the agenda and reach out to the other members of the board GNSO working group? Bruce Tonkin had a lot of input, so did Steve Crocker and then some of the other counselors.
Greg. It may be aggressive to try to get that scheduled for Marrakesh, but we can certainly make the request and try to get it scheduled if that's something this working group wants to pursue.
Okay. Yeah, that you're right. We just have a few days before Marrakesh starts, really. So, does anybody feel that, you know, getting that rationale and talking to the board GNSO working group who developed the charter and the plan, you know, proposed the three phases, makes sense? Does anybody disagree with that?
Hi, Susan. This is Jennifer Sandiford. I do not disagree with that.
Okay. Okay, and Greg, you have your hand up, so let's go to you.
Yeah, thanks, Greg Shatton again. I think in terms of the order of questions, Susan, I tend to agree with Susan's logic that we really do need to start with users and purposes. We don't have to call that requirements, but users and purposes, because we can't answer, for instance, the question about what's now currently question four, really without knowing who the users and what their purposes might be. And that's so I think I would definitely have, you know, one before four. Whether we move four up to two is, you know, another question. I wouldn't mind seeing it that way. I mean, data accuracy could come at any point, and it might actually make sense to have data accuracy after data elements, because different types of elements will require different types of accuracy and the like. And gated access, you know, is perhaps something that comes after both understanding the users, the purposes, and the elements. So perhaps the order should be what, you know, 1, 4, 2, 3, 5. I would still think the steps needed to protect data and privacy are kind of linked to the gated access, so those could be near each other. I don't think we need to put the steps needed to protect data and privacy all the way up front. Finally, I think this is all going to be iterative. So not only, just like with chickens and eggs, ultimately you end up with chickens coming after eggs and eggs coming after chickens. So hopefully the starting point here is not going to influence kind of the work we do. And you know, one of my concerns, and maybe I'm just paranoid, is that there are, you know, ways to kind of influence where the work goes by influencing, by deciding the order in which the work is done. I hope that we're going to end up, you know, being iterative enough and in our early processes be open to kind of over you know, I guess putting everything on the table rather than trying to fight to put elements on the table. Because I think that ends up kind of front-loading some of the more difficult elements of the work, and I think that, you know, once we have a better understanding of the universe of these 5 points, we'll be a bit better able to answer some of the difficult questions that we inevitably will end up with. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. One thing I'd like to point out, too, is that we're really, you know, tasked with looking forward. What should the registration data be in the future? Not necessarily how do we fix the current who is, though that is a question we need to get to also, is do we even think there is a need to replace the current who is? This should all be forward-looking and not focused on what is currently being done. And that is something that EWG tried to do. We didn't. We tried to remove from our minds that the current status was. But interestingly, we came up with a lot of the same use cases as what currently exists. So, Stephanie has hand up. And your microphone has a red line through it. If you're talking, we can't hear you.
Okay. Takes two goes at clearing my microphone for some reason. Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I promise I'll stop after this, but I just want to reiterate that the fundamental framework for determining the purpose of the question, use, and disclosure of the data, which is one of those questions primordiales that are in the that are in our charter, there are various things that have to be evaluated: fairness, proportionality, and ICANN's broader purpose. And that, of course, feeds into ICANN's broader public interest purposes. So the unfortunate thing about, and I quite agree, you can't understand what's going on with the data from an engineering perspective if you don't understand what people are using the data for. But if you skip that fundamental question of what ICANN's responsibility is as a data controller, understanding its human rights obligations, then I hate to say it, but you're going to have to listen to me shrieking at every single use case. That's illegal. That's a violation of fundamental human rights. That's, you know, the SX Three Blind Men and an Elephant said, figure out why we're doing this, because we have just continued keeping on adding more data elements as more players join the ecosystem and wanted different data elements at different rates of accuracy. This all has to be evaluated from a fairness and proportionality perspective, not needs, not, quote, requirements. And the unfortunate thing about our very long list of expertise, if we get every single stakeholder who's making money out of the personal data that is being illegally released right now at the table, and there are no data commissioners coming because they are more or less hors de commission from the get-go because of their independent judiciary roles, we're going to be in trouble, folks. We will create yet another thing that is illegal. I'm sorry, I'll stop now, but
This is a fundamental question that we have to at least skirt around before we dive into the data elements. Thanks.
Okay, Stephanie, thank you for that passionate statement. Jim?
Thank you. This is Jim Galvin for the transcript. I'm talking about SAC 55 and, you know, three blind and an elephant. And, you know, the foundational question that SAC was asserting in that document is, what is the purpose of registration data? I also think it's useful to keep in mind SAC 54, the document that immediately preceded that, where SAC talked about a data model for registration data, which asked the question about purpose of registration data in a slightly different way. One of the questions that I would ask here in this group, and I think we seem to be dancing around this, the EWG report did a very good job of looking at all of the current uses of registration data, who is data. You know, on the back end, it's really registration data, so I'm going to use that phrase. All of the current and existing uses. But a question that I would ask is, what really is within ICANN's remit, or what should be the base focus of why we have registration data? If you go back to SAC 54, you look at the data model that SAC was proposing for consideration as a starting point was based on the model that the reason registration data exists is to support the management of a domain name in its life cycle. Many of these other use cases, I would assert, if you look at the EWG report, are all sort of ancillary to that. They are additional things that people want to do because domain names exist. You know, are we required to actually address all of their needs and ensure that we collect all of their data to serve their purposes? Is that really what the purpose of ICANN is and the purpose of this group in looking at the next generation registration data? So, you know, I leave you with the idea that as we talk about SAC 55 and the purpose of registration data, I also wanted to tie it to SAC 54, where a model for registration data that was proposed was to support the life cycle of a domain name. And so I would question, you know, ask for some discussion at some point here in all of this about how all of these things tie together and whether or not we're going to broaden the purpose of the data model. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Michaeli?
Thanks, Michaeli, for the record. Speaking as a dirty, filthy registrar who's expected to collect a lot of this data, Jim raises some very valid questions. Now, I don't know whether we're able to answer those, whether they're within scope of our charter or not, but those questions can't really be ignored. I mean, just speaking just as an individual member of this working group, the problem, I suppose, is it's one of habit, or to use another analogy, you know, the genie is out of the bottle. People have got used to having access to a lot of this data. Coming from my line. Okay, it stopped. Yeah, well, that went straight into my ear. I'm wearing an earpiece. Like, I was on another mailing list where somebody was complaining about a particular CCTLD. And it wasn't that the CCTLD had any actual issues of abuse or anything like that. The complaint was, oh, I have to work a bit harder to get access to some of the data in order to be able to investigate some kind of complaint. Now, why is that the CCTLD operator's problem? You know, much as why do some people assume that they're entitled to a huge amount of data just because historically it was there? I mean, one of the things that I think Susan and some of the others who were on the EWG can agree is that when we were looking at a lot of this, we looked at how much data was going to be available and under what circumstances. You know, the idea that it would just you would have free and unfettered access to everything was something that we didn't consider. I'm sorry, we didn't consider it to be acceptable as a norm. That every bit of data needed some level of protection, and it was really a matter then of arguing, discussing, defending, whatever, the levels of protection that were wrapped around this. So I think, you know, Jim's point is well made. Thanks.
Thanks, Michaeli. And this is my personal capacity, again, not in leading this call, but I think the EWG, and Michaeli, you can disagree with this, but I think we did look at all of the in looking at use cases first, we sort of stepped through the life cycle of a domain name and identified what was necessary to really, from my perspective, manage that domain name from beginning to end, and what I needed, I needed to see my own Whois data and verify information. And so I think the EWG, and this is really not should not be a discussion of what the EWG did or didn't, except that there is some experience that we could learn from, and this working group may need to go through the exact same process, which is why the first question is users and purposes. So I do think that if you look at all the use cases, a certain amount of those will, I think everyone would agree, and that were, it's part of that life cycle of a domain name, and that it is necessary for a lot of good reasons, whether or not those reasons are still viable, because this was, you know, a couple years ago, or there's new use cases. Those are all things this working group should look at, in my opinion. So that's just my personal feeling, but I do think we need to start with users and purpose. Kathy, you have your hand up.
It's interesting. It's kind of a philosophical divide here about where to start. And so I wanted to follow up on what Jim was saying and the foundational questions, because I think we're jumping into, with users and purposes, I think we're jumping into the middle of the pond. But if we start with what data elements are being collected, stored, and disclosed, and maybe what should be collected, stored, and disclosed, we're starting with the elements. And that's, I think, where we have to start with. What is the data? And then the question Jim asked, before we get to users and purpose, is there a framework that will help us analyze primary purpose and secondary purposes, because that's what we're going to have. We've got the primary purposes of the data, which it looks like we have a lot of material to work from, both the EWG and the ESSAC materials, as well as the expertise on this working group. But so to quote Jim, are we required to serve all the purposes for the data that people would like? And then let me follow up, are we legally allowed to do so? And to do that, we have to get to at least a part of question five, not what steps are necessary to protect the data and privacy, but that assumes we know what the legal requirements are for data and privacy. So I really think we have to move that issue up early, and then we can begin to talk about secondary uses, secondary purposes, and kind of how to evaluate them through the prism of data protection laws, which is how the registrars and ICANN really kind of have to legally do it. So I think the order makes a really big difference here. Thanks.
More important that we discuss this in Marrakesh in detail. Lisa also has pointed out in the chat that, you know, page 18 of the EWG report provides a high-level statement of purpose that guided the group's deliberations. That may or may not be helpful for others to read. And so let's move off of these fundamental questions, because I don't think we're going to be able to iron this all out on the phone today, and that wasn't the intent of this anyway. I may have overstepped a little bit on what Chuck asked me to lead today. Is there, if you've looked at the rest of the work plan, are there any other issues or timing on the work plan that you consider that we need to discuss, or is you don't quite understand? Are there any questions on the rest of the work plan? And just setting aside those questions for now. Kathy, is that a new hand or an old hand?
Sorry, old hand.
Okay.
But it may be a little early. Actually, let me just follow. It may be a little early for general questions. At least for me, I've kind of focused on first things and now getting the rest of the plan. We just got it, so many of us may be still evaluating. Thanks.
Yes, and I do recognize that. So what I would suggest is that, and I know everybody's going to be very busy with getting to the ICANN meeting if you're attending, and work in general. So, but if we could suggest that you do a complete review of the work plan, like I said, Chuck has put a lot of work into this, and then encourage comments on the email threads, and then we can discuss. That'll help us figure out what exactly we're discussing in Marrakesh. So I would urge everyone to do that. And also, when you read this work plan, to go back to the charter and really read the charter once more. I'm sure everybody's read it, but it's very helpful to go back and see what the board GNSO working group intended for this working group. And is there any other questions or concerns? And Kathy, your hand is still up, old or new? Oh, old. All right. This is sort of a last call for comments on this. I think we've got quite a few notes to take back to the leadership team in general, and a lot of action items. Any other comments or concerns? Farnika. We can't hear you, Karnika. I do see you had a question for Lisa.
Yes. I just wanted to request if it's possible to continue the conference after the scheduled time just to discuss the expertise which, as a final matter.
Marika or Lisa, is that possible?
Marika? Sorry, just getting off mute.
Sorry.
I think it is probably possible, although, of course, the call is only scheduled for 19 minutes, but we're actually wondering whether it's not easier just to produce a new version based on the comments and try to finalize it by email. I don't know if that's an easier way to come to a conclusion. And, of course, I don't know either if all the small team members can even stay on, and I know that several of them are actually not even on the call. So it's up to you. I think we can leave the call open for a bit longer, but maybe it's more effective to do it by email.
So would you expect our comments to this mail by tomorrow morning?
we're expecting to circulate a revised version immediately after the call because we hope to launch the poll later today to be able to give everyone enough time to complete the poll before we have our meeting in Marrakesh.
And this just pertains to the small group, small team, so others that are saying that. And Lisa has said with 2 hours, if you have 2 hours to comment on the poll, draft poll, the small team only. Will that work for you if, Farnika, if Lisa sends out draft version 4 of the poll, and would you be able to comment in the next 2 hours?
Very good. Yes.
Okay. So, yes. All right. So, I'm going to give you all back 3 minutes of your day. Not much. But thank you all. And Chuck will be heading up the call in Marrakesh, and everybody safe travels, and I hope to see you all there.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines. And Operator Ed, if you could please stop all recordings.